So I should let somebody that was here last week give like a recap then, you know, what we talked about. So apparently the others that were here were just totally freaked out by the stuff we talked about and said, I'm staying out of that place. I just feel guilty and overwhelmed when I leave his. Right. So anyway, well, I'm so glad to be back here with you guys again. And, you know, I spent quite a bit of time at the beginning of last week just talking about my relationship with Bellevue and how much I love this place and love the staff. And I would put you guys, next-gen staff, up against any other staff that I get to be a part of. And I get to travel all over the U.S. and internationally, and I love being here in this building, you know, with these parents, you know, you guys. And it is always just such a, I feel very loved when I come to this place, you know, and which is why my wife many times says, why don't we just go to Bellevue? Because God has us someplace else. Anyway, but it's great to be back here with you guys. We're going to, last week we talked a lot about cell phones. We talked about video game systems. We talked about some sexual issues concerning those. We talked about boundaries with those. So if you have questions about those issues, you can either talk to someone that was here, or I'll talk a little bit about some of the resources we have available at the end. Or if you want to go to techsavvyparenting.com, and you can read some articles and free resources on our blog there. Or you can go to 360family.org, and there's quite a bit of free resources on there as well about technology and parenting, as well as all different kind of issues concerning parenting. And it's everything on our website is free. So, and I'll tell you why it's free later, okay? So tonight, we're going to jump into the second part of this. And I was so glad last week when Jason said, why don't you just come back and let's punt what we're going to do, and let's just pick up with the rest of this, because this presentation is what I get booked to do more than any other presentation around the country. And it's always, like, some groups, they'll give me 2 hours, and others, it's like, you got 40 minutes. And I'm going, you got to be kidding me. Like, there's no way we're going to do justice to this in 40 minutes. And, of course, you know, we were here for, what, 50, 55 minutes last week, and we barely just scratched the surface. So tonight, we're going to jump in and talk about, really, one of the core values of adolescence. And when I say core values, I believe our core values as humans are values that are given to us, needs that are given to us by our Creator that have to be met in our life. And if they're not met by our Savior, they're not met by the Holy Spirit in a relationship with Him, then we go about trying to have those needs met in unhealthy ways. And so, for instance, would we all agree that we have a need, we have a value as humans to be loved? Yes, right? That God, because our Creator made us to be loved. And so what happens, though, is many people, we don't know God's love, or we haven't experienced a depth of His love, and so we go about seeking to fill that love void in other unhealthy ways. So, for instance, why does an adolescent girl, what is the answer she gives for why she has sex with a boy? Because she's looking for what? Because she's looking for love, right? Not because she looks for a pal, or not because she likes intercourse. Matter of fact, this has nothing to do with this presentation, but sidebar, I don't know if you know this or not, moms, dads, but the typical adolescent girl who has had sexual intercourse describes intercourse as something being done to her, not with her. You get that? So here is an act, here is a gift of intimacy given by our Creator that's meant to be experienced in the context of a covenant relationship between a man and a woman committed for life. But when we try to experience that intimate love outside of God's design, then it's a distortion. It's no longer a holy thing. It's no longer a set-apart thing, which is literally what holy means. And so, you know, our culture, and even us as Christ followers, when we're not connected to the Creator, when there's not spiritual intimacy going on in our life, we have this emptiness and this void, so we seek out that love, you know, to be filled someplace else. So one of the other values that we have is community. That I believe that we were made to live in community with one another. Ultimately, we were made to live in community with our Creator. We see that in the very beginning, that God Himself lives in community. He is in community with Him, God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit. There's three parts in one. And even in the whole creation process in Genesis 1 and 2, we see the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit all active in the creation process because they are in community. They're in right relationship with one another. And then when He made man, He communed with man. He had a relationship with man. But then He saw that man, it wasn't good for that man was alone. So what did He do? He made a helpmate. He made community. So now He made other beings just like man so that we could live in relationship. And not just so that man and woman, Adam and Eve, could have intimacy in the garden, but so they could have relationship in the garden, so that mankind, we could have neighbors and have friendships and those kind of things and workmates. But what happened is our teenagers now, we live in this technological culture. And because of that, everything that they, all these needs they have in their life, they try to meet them through technology. How many of you guys remember your children? I'm sorry, I was showing Jason something, and we're at the wrong place. Okay, so just time out. You can edit this out of the audio, whoever the audio man is. Okay, all right, here we're back on. How many of you remember your young children playing on websites like Webkinz or Club Penguin or Neopets or any of those things? Raise your hand. How many of you still have a child that plays on any of these or some version of these kind of websites? Yeah, yeah. You know, and here it is. The whole point of these websites is you can create with Webkinz, you can actually buy a pet, and then you go online, and that pet can live online as well. But you have these virtual pets and these penguins, and you play games, and you get points, and then you could build, a little dog house and clubhouse for your pet, and people can rate it, and you can color it, and you can interact with other people's pets and, games, that kind of thing. Now, I've never seen anything, never read any reports about anything inappropriate on these websites, right? But really what our children are learning to do at a really young age is they're learning how to live in community. They're learning how to share their life at the age of 6 online, right? Now, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I have nothing against these websites, but it is what it is. We have to call a spade a spade. And when my daughter goes online starting at age 6 and 7, and she's got a pet, and she can see the pet online, and other people are talking about her pets, and she's making stuff for her pet and feeding her pet and all that kind of stuff, and I'm like, wow, you have this life online at the age of 6. Now, would you be surprised to know that most of these websites are owned by very few companies? That we just like toy makers, right? There's really only about 5 giant toy companies, and so many of them are conglomerates. So you may see, something like Bratz dolls. You remember those Bratz dolls that were around, right? Right. They were owned by the same company. Now they are owned by the same company who makes Barbie, right? Now, I mean, you may think, well, Barbie's okay, but I don't want my kid playing with Bratz. But no wonder when you go to the toy store, they're right next to each other because they're owned by the same company, right? So the same thing, a lot of these websites are owned by conglomerates who have like 50 to 100 different websites that they own. And so what happens is our kids, they get used to sharing their life online, sharing information online, so all of a sudden they get to the age of 11, 12, 13, and they venture online into other more adolescent or grown-up social media worlds, such as, Facebook or Twitter, YouTube, Pinterest, Instagram, those kind of things. Now, let's say that you've got a kid who at the age of 6, she's begun to share her pictures and, pictures of her pets and share information about her life and that kind of thing online. Well, then all of a sudden she gets to the age of 12 or 13 and she has a Facebook account. And you just set it up for her with no conversation at all about boundaries. Now, you've never had a conversation about inappropriate things on Neopets because it wasn't necessary, because it doesn't allow you to share personal information. You can't put your cell phone number or your home address or even your real name on those websites. But all of a sudden what happens as parents, we get used to our kids with these more innocent sites. Then they get to the more grown-up sites, and we don't have conversations with them saying, hey, listen, there's some potential landmines here for you that you need to be aware of. And so we set these things up, and then they go online. They begin to share all kinds of information. There was a story that PBS did a few years ago about Facebook, and it was just kind of coming into its own. And one of the stories they talked about is this young girl named Jessica. And Jessica, she had red hair, and she, you know, lots of freckles, and she felt like she was overweight. She felt unattractive. She felt like the kids just made fun of her at school, and she was in seventh grade. But then she set up a Facebook account, and she went into her bedroom, and she laid on her bed and kind of put on, you know, nothing highly sexual, but some suggestive outfit, and took a picture and uploaded it to her Facebook account. Within a few minutes, she began to get, you know, messages from complete strangers saying, "Oh my gosh, that outfit looks so hot on you. You are so sexy. I would love to see that outfit in person," and things like this. And all of a sudden now she's getting what? She's getting attention. She's getting affirmation that she has to have, because she's made to be loved. But now it's a distortion. Do you see this? She thinks it's going to fill her up. So what happens to Jessica is over the next 6 months, she uploads over 1,000 photographs of herself in increasingly sexual positions and situations. And I could show you a before and after picture. And she eventually became this very, very popular goth girl on Facebook. But when she went to school, she was just the innocent, freckled, redheaded girl. You know, what was the other bizarre thing is about a third of the kids in her own high school were, quote, friends with her on Facebook, but none of them had any idea who she was. They had no idea this was the same girl that they go to school with, because she looked completely different when she went online. She totally changed her whole personality, the way that she looks, the way that she talks, because she got this affirmation, this attention that she so desperately wanted. Facebook, all these websites, they have very high standards when it comes to age restrictions. They require that you must be at least 13 years old in order to get onto them. And the way that you have to verify that is there's always a little box similar to this that pops up. And you fill out the box, and at the bottom right there it says, "I certify I'm 13 years old." And that's it. And that's the high bar that they set for our kids, right, in order to keep them off of these websites. Matter of fact, there is a I think I've got it here. Well, let's get to it in just a second. There's the other thing that kids are doing more and more often now is video chatting on sites. And we know that 38% of all kids that have cell phones, which last week we talked about a lot about cell phones, and we said that, do you guys remember the percentage of preteens that have cell phones? 40. Yeah, 40% of all preteens have cell phones. How many teenagers? Yeah, it was right at like 79% of all 14 to 18-year-olds now have their own cell phone. And so 38%, more than a third of those, are now doing video chatting, which means that they have apps similar to whether it's something like Skype or a site like Bazookam or FaceTime or any other different, you know, video chat sites where they can have conversations with people. There's we talked about an app last week called I've got it here. Did we talk about the apps last week? Yeah, I can't remember which ones I had up here last week. Hey, would you did you say Snapchat? Yeah, it's a new app called Omegle, and the way that it works is once you open the app, you get to have a texting conversation with a complete stranger. And what's his name? The guy that owns the Dallas Mavericks? Mark Cuban. Mark Cuban, right now, he's put over, it's like $20 million that he's now put into a new app that they're developing so that you can have anonymous video chats with people as well, with complete strangers. So that as soon as you open the app, you're connected to a stranger, which is, that's what this website here does. This is Bazookam, and there's another one called Chat Roulette. And the way Chat Roulette works is once you open the you go to the website, and this is okay, I'm tied down. Good grief, you're talking about being a slave to technology. Okay, there we go. I'll come over to here. So whenever you go to the website, and both Bazookam and Chat Roulette look almost identical. So when you open up the website, it looks like this. And here's my picture at the bottom. And just to let you know, I am not having a conversation with this girl. Okay. But as soon as you open the website, your webcam comes on. And almost all of our laptops now have webcams built into them. So as soon as you open the website, all of a sudden my webcam turns on automatically, right? You have to make it, you have to go in and you make it turn it off, all right? So it's going to default to turning it on. So what you already know is somehow this website has got access to your computer, which is scary right there. So all of a sudden it turns your webcam on and it puts your video, your live feed down here. And when you click start, it scrolls through all these total strangers. And all of a sudden, their video shows up. And you're having a video chat with some 58-year-old man from Czechoslovakia. You know, matter of fact, the FBI did a study of these anonymous chat sites and concluded that you have about a 70% chance of encountering pornographic material when you go to these websites. Right, and now I told you that it's 38% of kids that have cell phones are going to these sites and using these anonymous chatting apps, in part because they think it's fun, you know, to have these anonymous conversations or just to see what's out there. I know I've talked with other youth pastors who said it's become kind of a trend thing now at girls' sleepovers, because girls will get the sleepover and get out the laptop and go, oh my gosh, this is so funny. Let's see who we're gonna find on there. And, you know, again, more than 50-50 chance it's going to be, you know, some man exposing himself. Is when I say pornographic material, that's what we're talking about, right? So there's some other potentially risky behavior. 79% of all teens say that their peers share too much personal information online. That's like saying, I have a friend who has a problem, right? Yeah. 64% say that they do things they would not want their parents to know about online. Now, over 80% of all parents say that they are fully aware of their child's online activities. But yet 64% of teens say that they do things they don't want their parents to know about. Can those both be true? There's no way that those can both be true statements. 20% of teens have posted nude or semi-nude photos of themselves online. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to pause for just a second. I think we mentioned last week about the teenagers who had, the 20% who had sent nude or semi-nude photos of themselves online. When these kids were asked about why did you share this? So weird. Okay, here we go. We're not back on. Sorry. I really do apologize. If this is your first time to hear me in a presentation, if this is not your first time, you know this is not normal for me. But I told you last week we showed up and none of my stuff is on there. So someone bought me, our ministry just bought us a brand new laptop 2 days ago. And for some reason, a lot of the files are not syncing up correctly. So the presentation I had up was actually an older presentation, because I update this every single time we do it, to show people like what's happening right now. So that's why when I was going through it, I was like, this is not the right stuff. This is from like 6 months ago. So anyway, When it comes, there's some potentially risky behavior with kids when it comes to social media. How many of you moms kept a diary when you were a child or in middle school, high school? And who got to read your diary?
Nobody.
Yeah, nobody, right? Matter of fact, I'm guessing most of your diaries actually came with some kind of a lock and key. And then you would put it like, you know, in a box, inside of a box, under a pile of clothes, in the back of the closet, you know, because you're like, no one gets to read these private thoughts. But what's and the majority of girls still keep a diary, but unfortunately now they're doing their diary is online, where they're going online and sharing their personal information. I found this remarkable that 95% of girls say that they keep their darkest secrets off of Facebook. 78% said that they're worried about posting their feelings on social media, but yet 71% of them still post personal information on Twitter and Facebook. And I'm like, okay, wait, but there's a contradiction in statements here. 95% of you are saying you don't post secrets on Facebook, but then 71% of you are saying, yeah, I'm afraid of what people might see about what I say on Facebook. And I'm like, well, you have this stated value that you don't want to share too much information. But yet more than 7 out of 10 of you are admitting that that's exactly what you're doing, is you're going online and sharing personal information. I shared with you last week about the girl from your own youth group that shared the information. I was able to go on her Facebook and I had her home address and her cell phone number and her class schedule. She went to Appling Middle School. She took French horn lessons on Thursday afternoons at 4 o'clock here at the church. You know, that she's just sharing about her life. She didn't post this stuff and say, here, come track me down. She's just talking about, she's a middle school girl, just talking about what's going on in her middle school world. But yet she's being very careless with what it is that she's sharing. One of the beefs that I have with Facebook, when we talked about how difficult it is for kids, you know, wink, wink, how not difficult it is for them to get onto these social media sites, is the sheer number of underage kids. When I say underage, I mean under 13 of them that are on Facebook. Now, I know that Facebook is not the thing with teenagers that it was a year, much less even a year ago, but it is still the most popular social media site with teenagers. There's a growing perception among adults that teenagers don't go to Facebook anymore. And I'm telling you, that is in part created by media, as because they pick up on stories and begin to talk about them so much that we began to believe them. So they could get on the news and tell us there's a new country in the world and with a new president of that country, and they're all people are blue, and if they talked about it enough, we'd believe it, you know? So anyway, they picked up on the story because there is a trend where there is a decline in monthly clicks on Facebook among teenagers. But it is still the first place that they go whenever they're able to get on social media. But look at this graph here. It shows that 55% of all 12-year-olds in America have a Facebook account. All right, that's more than half of all 12-year-olds in America. Now, how old does Facebook say that you're required to be?
13.
You have to be 13. Now, they have to require that by law, because Facebook, what they do is anything that you post on Facebook, Facebook owns it. You realize that, right? Like if you put some pictures of you on vacation or anything that you know, some kind of little just statement that you make or all the things that you like on Facebook, and they own all that information. So even after you cancel your account, they can use your pictures or, you know, anything that you, groups that you've been a part of to promote those groups later. But really what they do is they're required by law that you have to be 13, because they use everything that you do to create, in order to market things to you. So when you go online and you say, man, I loved my Snickers bar this afternoon, and then tomorrow you get on Facebook and, wow, look at that, there's all these Snicker ads popping up. Right? Because everything that you do, they have these algorithms to suck all that information and these formulas in order to spit out ads to you. Now, there's a federal law that you have to be at least 13 years old in order to get information from a citizen, right? So, I mean, the citizen has to be 13 years old. So that's why these websites require you to be 13. Now, there's other websites or apps like Instagram. And Instagram doesn't grab your information. Pinterest doesn't take your personal information. So you can be whatever age you want to on Instagram. All right. Now, it's up to you. If you have a 7-year-old and you want to let your 7-year-old on Instagram, that is between you and the Holy Spirit, whatever you feel like is best for your 7-year-old. All right. For me and my daughter, we required her to be 13, you know, in part because that's what Facebook said, and we just felt like that was a good benchmark. And we said, why? And here's the deal, too. Like, once you say yes, you can't ever take it back. Right? I mean, it's kind of like giving your kid a cell phone at 11 and then coming back and going, yeah, I changed my mind. Let me have it back. Oh, that's going to go over real well, isn't it? You know, like, once you open the door, you know, the cat's out of the bag. So we just decided, hey, we're going to wait till 13 because there's some good in delayed gratification. Right? So kind of let's earn the right to be on Instagram and Facebook. Here's this even more startling one, is that 1 out of 3 of all 11-year-olds are on Facebook. Now, that's more than 7.5 million underage kids on Facebook. 88% of these parents said it's okay if their child lied in order to be on Facebook. All right. Now, among all of those 10, 11, and 12-year-olds that are on Facebook, over 70% of them, their parents set up their profile for their child. All right. Now, here's the problem I have with underage kids on Facebook. It's not the 12-year-old being on Facebook. Because, I mean, your kid can get on Facebook at 12 if they want to. And unless you're really, you know, savvy, you may not know about it. All right. Because, again, there's no big requirements. They just got to click yes that they're 13. So that's between them and God if they're being honest. The problem I have with it is that 70% of them are on there because mom and dad set the thing up, which to me, what that means is that mom and dad, you've just told your child that integrity is not important. You get it? The issue is not Facebook. The issue is that even our Savior said that He Himself is under the authority of the Father, that He Himself is under the authority of Rome, that He Himself is under authority, right? Meaning that He didn't go around bucking the system, that He played by the rules, because integrity is part of the character of our Creator, and that we are to live out that character because we're made in His image. And so I'm guessing that this is probably how it happens, is mom sits down with her 12-year-old and says, okay, now I'm going to let you have a Facebook, but I'm going to set it up with you so we could talk about this and make sure you know how to do this and you do it, you know, you do it right. And then they walk the whole process and it gets to the bottom where you have to click, I certify I'm 13 years old, and mom looks at daughter and wink, wink. Now I trust you to be safe on here. Now you don't do anything wrong on here, okay? And then they click yes. Now, in the big scheme of things, I'm sure our culture thinks it's no big deal. But for me as a Christ follower, I feel like what I've just told my son is that you have to obey me, but I don't have to obey anybody. I don't have to live by the rules that you have to live by. I can do whatever I want. I can bend them if it pleases me. And so for me, it has to get back to part of, we're going to talk at the end of how do we create a theology of technology as a family. And part of that is by saying, hey, you know what? I'm going to model Christ-likeness as a mom and dad in the way that I use it, so that my child has a better chance of being able to honor God in the way that they use this stuff as well. All right. Which we mentioned the chat roulette and those kind of sites. The percentage of teens who use video chats either in the web or through the apps, it's 4 in 10 of all texting teenagers now use video chats. 100, the amount of your personal information that Omega keeps in their servers and can use in their advertising is 100%. That is the app that is the anonymous chat app. And so once you get on there, they have your information and they can use it however they want to. Because once you downloaded the app and set it up, you have to, you know, when you make those agreement statements where you click I agree, well, part of the fine print says that they can do whatever they want to with your information. And so the fear that I have is that there's going to be a case. We're going to read into some news story of some kid who lost his college scholarship because of some video chat he had with some other girl on Omegle or Chat Roulette or something like that, where all that video is being captured, even though they say it's anonymous, and it can potentially be used against them later. 39%, we talked about the 20% who posted nude and semi-nude photos of themselves. 39% of teens have sent or received a sexually suggestive text message. So this is more than one out of three of all the kids that have cell phones now are using them to send these sexually suggestive text message and videos and photos of themselves. Now, when you were, you know, moms, when you were in middle school, if you wanted to flirt with some boy, what would you do? You know, you'd write some note and stick it to his locker, or, you know, pull his hair or kick him in the shin, or, you know, something like that. I like you, and kick him and run. And today, now it's our daughters take pictures of themselves, wearing as little as possible. I like you, don't you like me? And they send it to some boy. You know, and don't think, again, that this is some rare thing. And I think that one of the healthiest things that you can do when you hear information like this is just be willing to ask the question, might this be something that we need to have a conversation about when we get home? Because what happens to us as Christian parents is we hear this stuff and we go, whew, man, I'm so glad that's not my kid, or my kid would never do something like that. And unless we're willing to agree with what is reality and walk in truth, then I feel like we are potentially setting our kids up for a moral defeat. And so 66% of girls and 60% of boys said that the reason why that they sent those photos and videos and sexual messages was to be fun or flirty. Matter of fact, the majority of girls who did it say that the reason why they did it is they felt pressured by a boy to do so. That the boy was saying, hey, if you really like me, this is what my last girlfriend did. This is the kind of picture she sent, so if you want to date me, then you need to send that kind of picture, this kind of video as well. And again, I don't think it happens like all of a sudden your daughter gets propositioned by some boy and she's never done this before and he says, no, not this picture, I want a really good picture. And she goes, oh, okay, well, let me just take it all off then. That's not how it happens. It's very subtle, and it all of a sudden they find themselves doing something, they're going like, how did I get here? You know, even one of our board members, he called me a couple of years ago, and former board member, and he has a son who he goes on missions trips. He's a spiritual leader in his youth group. I mean, just he's always been a great, well-adjusted, spiritually, emotionally mature guy. And now he's in college, and I mean, he's living his life for Christ, but for a season there, he got out of bounds with what he was doing with his cell phone. And he and his first girlfriend were texting each other, and it was, hey, what are you doing this weekend? And he texts back, I don't know, I'm just hanging at the house. And she says, oh, who's at your house? And he said, well, I'm just here by myself. Oh, really? Where's mom and dad? I don't know. They're gone. Well, do you mean come by? Again, like, there's nothing inappropriate that's been said, right? And then it was, no, you don't have to come by. We can do whatever we need to on here. Okay, well, what do we need to do? Well, I don't know. You guess. And then before you know, there's over 100 text messages in the conversation. And by the time they get to the end, the two of them are basically propositioning one another. But it didn't start off that way. Do you see that? I mean, it just started off with, hey, what are you doing today? You know, who's at your house? But the conversation, the longer the conversation went, the more out of bounds they became. And the way I explain it to teenagers, I talk to teenagers a lot about boundaries in media and how do we honor God the way that we live in our culture. And the way that we do is we invoke what I call the just clause. And you could talk to your kids about this if you want to. The just clause. And the just clause says, okay, God, I see your boundaries. I recognize your truth. I know that as my creator that you know what is best for me. But just this one time. Or just one more time. Or just this one person. You know, whatever it is that we know the truth, but we say just once. And so what happens is, imagine like here it is, here's God's boundaries. We know what is his truth, but we say, okay, God, I know what your best is for me, and I know how you designed me as a man or as a woman and how to honor you with my life. But man, just this one time, I want to experience what everybody else is experiencing. And just like that girl, Jessica, that one picture turned to what? One more picture, and then one more picture, and one more picture. and then one more encounter, and one more touch, one more video. And before you know it, all of a sudden our kids are going, man, I have no idea how I got here. Like, I'm so far away from what God's boundaries are, and I don't know how to get back. I mean, I'm telling you, I've lost count of how many dads, how many husbands I've met with in coffee shops who have said, I may have irrevocably destroyed my marriage because of pornography, and I have no idea how I got here. Because I don't. Because what happened was, it was just one email that said, come spend time with me. Click on me. Come look at my pictures. And then one time turns into what? One more, and one more, and one more. 31% of them pretend to be older in order to get onto websites. Now, there's really only two kind of websites that you have to pretend to be older in order to get onto. One is going to be social media websites, and the other is going to be what I just alluded to, and that's going to be adult-oriented websites. Uh, 25% of them have a fake online identity. How many of you guys know your kids' email address? How many of you know their Facebook, you know, ID or their Pinterest ID or that kind of, how many of you kids know both of them? Or all three of their Facebook IDs? All three of their Pinterest IDs. Because more than one out of four of them have multiples. Because they're going to go, oh, you want, I can only be on Instagram if you have my screen name? Okay, I'll just go create a second screen name that only me and my friends get to see. Again, I'm not telling you this to make you fearful or to make you, you know, paralyzed. But again, we have to deal with reality. It's more than one out of four of them are living a deceptive life when it comes to social media. The number of porn sites in America right now is over 2 million. The number of web pages out there, a percentage of the web audience who's out there for the specific purpose of looking at internet pornography is 42.7%. Other surveys say that it's down around 30%. I'm not sure that that's anything to celebrate. You know, if it's down to 30%, I mean, we've still got almost one out of three of all the web audience out there specifically for the purpose of looking at internet pornography. 93% of boys and 62% of girls have seen internet pornography before the age of 18. It's 90% of all 8 to 18-year-olds have seen internet pornography. The average child's first exposure to internet pornography is 11. So if you're thinking, okay, we'll sit and we'll have a conversation about this when they turn 13 and they start doing social media, I'm telling you, chances are you've already missed it. You know, my son was 9 the first time we had a conversation about internet pornography. Now, I didn't call it pornography because he's 9. He doesn't know what that word means, right? So I just talked about, you know, as a little boy, you know, how does it make you feel if someone walked in the bathroom and you're getting out of the bathtub? You know, that you know what it's like to be embarrassed about your body, that your body is a private thing. And that sometimes pictures can pop up on our computer that may be a picture of someone that might be embarrassed if they knew that we could see them. And so if that ever happens, I need you to tell me. And I promise I won't embarrass you. Does that make sense? Because for a 9-year-old, they can understand that. And then at 11, we talked a little more specifically because now by 11, he understands the difference between boys and girls. His own body is changing by 11, right? Her own body is changing by 11. And so now we're talking about why are we attracted to boys and girls? Why are they attracted to men and women, to one another? And in part because of the way that God made our bodies, that he made us to be physically attracted to one another. And that's not a bad thing. But if we explore that outside of marriage, then it becomes an unholy and a sinful intimacy. And so then we talked about it again at 12 and 13. And by 13, the conversation is no longer just, hey, this is what pornography is, but it was, hey, buddy, let me tell you the reason why I know so much about this. It's because I remember when I was in fifth grade, and it was at my buddy Thomas's house. And Thomas says, hey, let me show you these pictures I found in my dad's room underneath the bed. And he pulls out this magazine, and we sit there in his floor and looked at this Playboy magazine, and it's been more than 35 years. And I could close my eyes right now and tell you exactly what those photos look like, because it never goes away. Does it, man? I mean, it's there forever. And so I'm able to sit down with my 13-year-old and tell him this. And some of you may be thinking, well, there's no way I want to tell my kids about what I did in my past, because then they may use it as an excuse. And I say hogwash, because what we can do is we know that we have been redeemed by the blood of Christ. Our sin is not counted against us anymore. And so instead, I can tell my son, I get it. I understand your struggles. And if there's anyone you ever want to talk to, you can always feel safe to come talk to me. And I will never, never, never shame you. Because once we bring shame into the equation, the conversation's over. And they're never going to talk to you again. You know, and it's not just a guy thing. It's a guy thing and a girl thing. Over 80% of all adolescent boys say admit to having some struggles, at least to some degree, with internet pornography. More than one out of three of all evangelical women in America admit to seeing internet pornography on a at least semi-regular basis. Focus on the Family has a hotline where pastors can call in and talk about their struggles. Number one reason why pastors call in, you want to guess? Internet pornography. And more than 40% of all adolescent girls say that they have had struggles with internet pornography. So it's half as many as the boys, but yet, I mean, 40%? I mean, that's pretty huge, isn't it, for girls? Why in the world would 40% of girls struggle with internet pornography? And it's different for the guys and the girls. You know, for the guys, it really starts off with both of them out of curiosity around the age of 10 and 11, because their own body's changing and they're looking for answers, and they typically don't get them from mom and dad, because we are so afraid of having these conversations about sexuality. But they have to have answers. They're going to get answers somewhere, right? Because we got answers somewhere, didn't we? And unfortunately, most of our answers came from the bathroom wall or from our buddy or some sleepover, you know, or for crying out loud at the church lock-in, you know. I mean, we found our answers somewhere, you know. And now our kids, the number one word that's searched for on Google every single day is the word sex. You know, and I'm guessing it's not 48-year-old men they're typing the word sex, but they know more specifically what they're looking for. You know, it's kids that type in this word because they're looking for answers. And so I don't fault them for trying to find answers, but what happens is all of a sudden when they stumble upon something that's not at all what God meant for it to be, then it opens up a whole new world to them. You know, and I remember, you know, my son, he was 11 years old, and he calls me. I'm back in my office, and he's like, Dad, come here. And I come in there, and he is red-faced. I mean, he's got this huge face of embarrassment. You know, and he's like, Dad, there's something on the computer. And I go in to look at it, and he had never seen pornography. And we homeschool as well, which means, you know, they typically be a little more sheltered by nature. And it was actually this Hawaiian woman, you know, like a Hawaiian dancer woman with a, you know, grass skirt on. And he thought, like, that's what I meant. Because, like she's only got, like, hair covered, you know, and everything else is out in the open, you know. And I was like, oh, thank you. I'm okay with that. And what happened was, because of that picture, you know, and that amount of skin, opened up curiosity that led to having to have a conversation letter about, hey, buddy, we need to talk about some of the websites that I see on our history list here. And what was it that made you decide to want to click on this? And what was it that you saw when you went there? You know, and we just, for me, with my kids down into the age of two, I don't know is never an acceptable answer. Because we always know why we do what we do. And so as long as we walk in love, you walk in love, you walk in grace with your child, you have a much better likelihood of he or she opening up to you and being willing to share with you. I had a dad call me Monday, two nights ago. And dad from Second Press called and said, hey, man, I was just looking at my son's video camera, and he's got internet access on it, and I see these videos that he's been looking at. He's like, I don't even know what to say. He was like, man, do we talk, and then let's go to the garage and get a sledgehammer and destroy the camera, you know, and just say, we're done with this. And I said, no, because now you've just taught your son that technology is evil. There's nothing wrong with a video camera. The problem was you didn't give boundaries to begin with, and now you're having to clean up the mess afterwards. And part of cleaning up a mess is having to walk in grace to talk with him about this. You know. Any questions about the pornography?
Yes. What is too much information at what age? Because he's 12. And
yeah.
I don't want to say too much where it makes him more curious.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
I would say before you have the conversation, make sure that you have internet blockers, that you have safety software on your computers. We talked about safety software for your hand devices and your gaming devices last week, your iPhones, your Android phones, your Nintendo DSs and PS1s and all those kind of things. But make sure that you have them for your computers as well, because if you introduce this conversation and your child is completely oblivious, then it is going to be a curiosity thing. But in all honesty, I've not encountered the kid who is not already, by the age of 12, you know, already looked in to try to find answers themselves. You know, if they're not looking for themselves, they're talking about it with, you know, with their buddies. I was leading a small group at a national camp about 3 years ago, and they asked me to do a more intimate setting with just a group of senior guys. And so they asked me to take 12 of the senior guys that were on their leadership team at this camp, and just talk with them about life and as they merge into college. And so I'm sitting with these 12 guys, and I said, okay, here's the deal, guys. I won't give you any BS if you don't give me any. You guys are 18 years old. Let's just shoot straight with each other. I said, how many of you guys went to church this past Sunday? All 12 guys raised their hand. I said, how many of you guys were at your youth group this past Wednesday night? 11 out of 12 raised their hand. So what that tells me is now they're taking intentional steps as an 18-year-old to be plugged into their peer spiritual community, right, their youth group. Because at 18, they don't have to, right? You can't control that, but they're doing it because they want to. And then I asked the question, I said, how many of you have looked at internet pornography in the past week? And all 12 raised their hand. These are 12 guys at church camp that are on the leadership team at this national camp. 100% of them are saying that within the past week they've looked at internet porn, right? So we can't act like just because our kids are mature or our kids are homeschooled or they go to private school or, you know, we don't let them have cell phones till 16 or whatever your standards are, that it's not going to affect your child. Mom? Right. So your question is, when does counseling get involved? I really can't answer that for you. I mean, I'm not trying to dodge it, but so much of this has to come back to what is between you and the Holy Spirit and where you feel like your child is. And there's not, just like your answer of like, you know, how much do I share? And, you know, the same thing, like when should a child get a cell phone? You know, when can they watch rated R movies? You know, I don't know. There's not a set age. It has to be, you know, partly the discernment of the mom and dad. I would say that I think the tendency for us as parents tends to overstep. You know, we want the pendulum to come way back the other way. So you find out your kid's looking at porn, and just like that dad says, well, then we're going to destroy the camera. We're going to get rid of all of our computers then, and we're going to dig a moat around the house, and we're going to cut the cable. You know, and, right? Because mom is like, I'm ticked. You know, and, you know, we're not having it anymore.
So what did you suggest to those 12 boys?
To the 12 boys? Honestly, I don't even remember that conversation. I can, because I've had so many of them. But what I've, like, with my son, we had to have a conversation about this again just 2 weeks ago. I mean, it's an ongoing conversation. I mean, I tell you this in part because I'm the guy that gets paid to do this. It still affects my family. And we have blockers on everything. right? Every device they have, all of our computers. My wife is the only one with a password to my own laptop, right? In part, guys, the reason why she's the only one is because I got sick of struggling with it myself. And call me weak. I don't care. But I finally got to the place that I just said, I'm tired of sitting in hotel rooms when I travel out there to preach. Sitting in hotel rooms by myself, being tempted by every other email that comes through Yahoo. And so my wife and I just talked about it, and I said, we need to put software on my computer, and you're the only one that has the password. And in part because that's what Paul says it will do to us in Romans. You know, and he says, well, then I've been given grace. Well, should I just go sin more and get more grace? And he talks about that struggle with the flesh in Romans 6 and 7. And, you know, why do I continue to do that which I, what I don't want to do? And why am I so captive to my flesh? And, you know, I think what I've chosen to do as a dad is I've chosen to say, I'm not going to spend all my time talking about sin. Instead, I'm going to spend the majority of my time talking about God's design instead. And uplifting what God's goodness looks like as opposed to distortion of His goodness. And so we've had conversations about pornography. We've had conversations about appropriate things to say and not say and what kind of photos you can and you can't put online and those kind of things. Like, for instance, my daughter, when she, it's the big thing now with all the girls to take their pictures with the boys and to have their arms wrapped around the boys. You know, it's not a side hug, it's a arm around and then an arm around this way. Does that make sense? Almost like your prom pictures when you're in high school and you're like going like this. Instead, now it's like you're like right up against like all, like you know. And I just told her, I said, hey, sweetie, you have to take that picture down. She was like, why? She said, all of like, this is how we, you know, he's just my friend. And I just said, yeah, but when you as a girl want to be friends with a guy, that's great. God made friendships. And when you put your arm around him, that's okay too. But as soon as your arm touched his belly, he doesn't want to be your friend anymore. You know, and that's all I had to say. And we laughed about it. You know, and she was like, oh my gosh, Dad, please. And I was like, I'm telling you, when your mom puts her hand on my stomach, I'm not thinking about, you know, being her gardening mate, you know. You know, and we just make a joke about it. And I can think of very few conversations that we've had that are like intense, because you could talk about these things without having to be an embarrassment, or have to be, we're always going to be serious about this. But with both of them, there have been very serious, you know, the tone was, this is real life. This is, you know, down to brass tacks kind of a thing, if that makes sense. With your son, you know, I would say, you know, in part, with my kids, my son and my daughter, my wife talked to my daughter first, you know, as we began to talk about sexuality. And we don't talk about sexuality just with technology. We began to have conversations about sexuality when they were young as well. You know, when they were like 8 and 9 years old, we never called body parts by weird names. You know, that kind of thing, because, you know, there's certain names for them and we're going to call them by their names. And God made sex to be a beautiful thing and it's not a shameful thing. And so we can talk about this. And so my daughter and wife went to a sexual purity weekend done by the Catholic Diocese here in Memphis. You can get information about it through the Natural Family Planning website. One of you moms may know what the website is. I don't know. But it's the Natural Family Planning website here in Memphis. And they do a mother-daughter and a father-son. And my son and I went when he was 11. And then my daughter went when she was 10. And then they went again this year when she was 13. Because she loved it, you know. And matter of fact, I talked with Jason Pyram about this several months ago. I said, I would really be interested in creating a father-son, mother-daughter program like that in the Protestant church. Like maybe using Bellevue as a guinea pig for that. And what it was like about a four-hour program with fathers and sons, and they had a coach and a priest and a dad and a high school senior. And they each spoke for about 10 minutes, and they had talked about different parts of, you know, intimacy. And and they had a clinician, a female clinician came in to vet with all the boys. And the priest talked about God's design for sexuality. You know, the dad talked about struggles with Living in Purity. The high school senior basically stood up and shared his testimony and said, I chose differently than my culture, and I'm better off for it. You know, and I'm telling you, across the bar, when you ask those 11, 12-year-olds their favorite part of the day, it's always hearing from that older kid, you know, because they look up to them. You know, and then my son, on the way home from ours, the clinician, I mean, she shares everything, you know, like pictures and all. Like, this is the woman's reproductive system, and this is what happens, and this is what grows, and everything else, you know. And on the way home, we're just making small talk. I'm like, hey, what did you like about the day, and what did you learn about the day? And then he goes, and Dad, he goes, I think I could have gone my whole life without hearing what that lady had to say. You know, but it was a good thing, you know, and because it doesn't demonize, you know, sexuality, and it doesn't demonize technology, and it doesn't demonize social media. I mean, social media is a great thing. I would guess every one of us in this room to some degree are using social media, right? It's not the social media that's bad, it's what we do with it as sinful man, fallen man, that can become unhealthy. Well, hey, we are out of time, and I don't want to miss the best part, all right? So let me get to just some closing steps for us. One of the things I talk about in the new Tech Savvy Parenting book that's coming out in 2 months is I talk about a theology of technology, and how that I believe as Christ followers, we can honor God in the way that we use technology. And that part of that is we have to walk within a biblical worldview, you know, by applying scripture to the way that we use technology. And one of them is in Ephesians 4:29 says, do not use foul or abusive language. Let everything you say be good and helpful so that your words will be an encouragement to those who hear them. So one, agree as a family that we will not use technology to demean, to gossip or tease another person. And two, do not confront another person online, including your own children. If your child, your teenager, posts an inappropriate photo or makes an inappropriate comment, or someone else makes an inappropriate comment on their, you know, post or their homepage or something like that, don't deal with it online. You know, deal with it in private. And I've had to do this with both of my children. All right, so I'm not exempt from this. But both of them, I went and I opened up the app or I opened up the website and just said, hey, I was looking at your Facebook today, and I saw this thing that you liked, and I went and looked at it, and I just think we need to have a conversation about this, you know. And as soon as I do that, they know the jig is up. I mean, like, they immediately know, like, oh, great, you know. But again, you know, I deal with it with grace and with understanding, you know, but to say, hey, there's got to be boundaries here. But what happens is if you go online and do this, then you're alienating your kid. You know, all of a sudden you're drawing a line in the sand. You're putting up a wall with social media where it's difficult enough for them to allow you to see, you know, on their Instagram, much less you going on their Instagram and saying, you better take this off here right now. Well, all of a sudden now the wall is up and they're just going to set up an alternate profile. And they're going to update that one with family pictures and update their next one with all the pictures of them and their friends. All right? So just deal with boundaries in the real world instead of online. Number two, honor yourselves and others. Romans 12, 9 and 10 says, don't just pretend to love each other. Really love them. At the end it says, love each other with genuine affection and take delight in honoring one another. Don't let the way that you use technology crowd out real time with each other. I think that's one of the biggest ways that we dishonor one another with technology. You know, Mom, when you're picking up your kid from middle school and you're in the car with your middle school daughter and all of a sudden she's having that vulnerable moment where she actually wants to talk to you and she just starts chatty and just starts sharing about what's going on at school that day and your cell phone rings and you say, oh, hang on just a second, sweetie, let me get this. There's no other way to say it other than you just dishonored your kid. Because you just told your daughter that this thing in your hand is more important than this conversation with her. I was having lunch yesterday with another pastor, and both of us had our cell phones on the table, and twice during lunch, his phone rang, and he answered it. And my phone rang, and I reached over, and I had forgotten to turn it off, and my phone rang, and I read it, and it hit the silencer. And he goes, oh, you can go ahead and get that. And I said, no, you don't understand. When I'm meeting with someone, I don't answer my phone because it's dishonoring. He was like, oh, okay. You know, because in part, I'm thinking, hey, man, let's set a bar. You know, and let our real life interaction be more important than our screen-to-screen interaction. And allow times for quietness in your day with no screens. You know, I know the first thing that we do, you know, first thing we do in the morning is we get up and turn our cell phones on or check our text messages or get on our Instagram or pop open Fox News on the TV or whatever it might be. And, you know, let the first thing you do be to wake up your kid and just, man, look at them in the face. Go spend 60 seconds with God before all the craziness of technology comes into our life. All right, and the last one is this, is to avoid sexual immorality. Ephesians 5:3 says, let there be no sexual immorality, impurity, or greed among you. Such sins have no place among God's people. To begin to pray, you know, moms, dads, I know moms, several of you have asked pretty serious questions about sexual issues tonight. I think the biggest thing that you can do is just to begin to pray, you know, for your daughters, that she will discover what beauty is by seeing her position in Christ. You know, who is it that God declares her to be? You know, and so like with my daughter, I've had to go back and say, hey, listen, the reason why you can't wear this shirt isn't because it shows your stomach. It's because I don't feel like it lets people see the real beauty of who God made you to be. Because then the boys are distracted by your body. And every 12-year-old girl has a beautiful body, right? It's just like they're all just slender. And so we said, instead, I want them to see who God made you to be as a person and them looking at the right things about you. And then just have ongoing conversations about sexuality and media. Look for teachable moments to have these conversations. All right. Jason asked me, I know we've gone over a couple of minutes. He asked me to mention this. We released an ebook last year called Tech Savvy Parenting that's available on the table over there. And then I end up getting it signed. It got signed by a publisher about 3 months ago, and they want to rush it out. It usually takes a year and a half to get a book out, and they want to get it out now. So coming out at the end of June, it's like July 1st, it's going to be released to the national audience, and it's gone through a 400-hour rewrite, and it is going to be the only book on the market of its kind. It's going to be a full-color paperback book. Like every page is going to have full color graphics, like the kind of stuff you saw tonight, all those charts and graphs in there. I mean, every page is just filled with like graphs in there. So it's not just reading information, you know, just dull. It's just, it really comes to life. And covering everything from, you know, video games to social media to pornography to sexting and texting and all kind of things. And it'll be available. Matter of fact, I think we're going to do a book signing here at your bookstore one Wednesday night this summer. So if you want to go to 360family.org, and at the bottom of our homepage is just a registration thing there, and we are too small of a ministry for us to care about selling your stuff to anybody else, all right? But if you register, then we'll send out an email to remind you that the book is coming out. Otherwise, if you want to buy the version that's over there now, it's just the ebook. I know that sounds stupid of some guy who's makes his living selling stuff, but I would recommend not buy the book tonight because it's gone through 400 hours of update over what that's available over there, right? But the other book available over there is called Engaging Your Teen's World, and it's a book that walks through a lot of issues of understanding how do you navigate culture with your teenager and even your preteen, and how do you set healthy boundaries? How do you help them discover who God's made them to be? And you guys walk in a healthy relationship together.